I'm Wayne Epps here with Mark Kazi Turner, special guest, and Zach Joakim. Got a special edition of the VCU basketball update for you today. We're going to kind of go long form, talk a little bit about VCU season as a whole, break out VCU's MVP this season so far. We're each going to choose sort of a stat of the year, most telling stat of the year. We're going to look at contender versus pretender in the A-10 tournament, who could win, who has no chance. And then we're going to take a look at VCU's backstretch of the schedule, what they have ahead as they finish the A-10 regular season, and also wrap up with a look at how many bids the A-10 may get this year. But first off, VCU is coming off a loss at Richmond on Saturday. It was a tough one, and they now lost two in a row, which makes Tuesday's game against Dayton that much more important. It was kind of, again, we saw they were kind of lackluster second half against George Mason, where Mason pulled away. And it was kind of that way throughout the whole game against Richmond. They just struggled defending. They struggled getting the movement and, paint touches they wanted on offense. They just kind of struggled all the way around. And, there was a lot of high energy in the Robinson Center on Saturday. And I think Richmond kind of fed off that, getting off to a fast start. And they got in a hole they never really dug out of. They had a little bit of a stretch where they were playing well beginning of the second half. Then they went on a little run late in the second half, but it was just too much of a hole. They were down by 18 at halftime. Nick Sherrod hit each of his first four three-pointers of the game, and his fourth, which is sort of my moment of the game, his fourth, which about 8 minutes to go, made a 26-13 game. And even at that point, that early in the game, it felt like it was kind of over already. Just the energy was all Richmond's way. And again, VCU needed a strong effort coming out of the Mason loss, and they just didn't get that on Saturday.
Yeah. VCU is in a bit of a energy debacle right now, especially after the Richmond game. It just feels like the energy for the black and gold is depleting. It's almost like your cell phone battery is blinking at like 5% and you need to charge quickly. And the way that Richmond came out from the Robin Center off the jump, especially with Sherrod, really nice guy, really don't like you right now after going 4-for-4 from three, but that's just a black and gold to me. I'm sorry, Nick Sherrod, you're a good guy. But that starting the game and then Grant Golden getting into the paint and VCU continuing their rebounding issue of not crashing the boards, getting into the paint, establishing that paint game that is really key for them to get victories. And now two straight losses, especially with local games between Mason and Richmond. Now they're in a little bit of a pickle.
It almost feels like they have writer's block right now. We've all been there a little bit, right? And I think it's because they feel the pressure with all the experience on this roster. And you have, five seniors, I believe, and you feel like you've got to try and take advantage of the moment right now with a really talented, experienced roster. And they're wishing that the shot's going to go in before they shoot it. They're pressing. And you see that in guys in the flow of the offense. I think it feels disjointed right now, and it's a psychological hurdle that they hopefully can get over tomorrow. They've got a great chance to get over it tomorrow with a huge game against Dayton coming up.
Yeah, you brought up a great point as far as the seniors maybe pressing a little bit. That's one thing. I think everybody from the outside looked at this season, having five seniors, you have two juniors, seven upperclassmen total, that experience was going to be a boon, particularly coming off such a successful year this year. One thing Mike Rose has talked about a little bit this year is that, sort of maybe the downside of having that experience is guys realize their window is closing. Mm-hmm. And so that's when they're pressing and they may be a little bit tight because they want to get the most out of the rest of their careers. And it's not maybe playing as loose as you expect from an experienced team. I think maybe you see a little bit of that from this experienced group, and it hurt the last couple of games. So kind of looking at VCU season as a whole now, on the offensive end, it's sort of been a weird reverse. Last year, they were really efficient inside, scoring at the rim, but they struggled shooting the three. This year, they shot the three a lot better. Almost right now, it's about almost 5 percentage points better than last year shooting the three. But they really struggled inside, finishing inside. You're seeing again that hurt these last couple of games. They have been doing a good job of sort of finishing their drives, and that's hurt because you're not getting that same efficiency. You're not getting to a good flow. You're not taking advantage of those paint touches when you're not finishing at the rim. And we've seen that recently. It kind of taking a dip, in conference play.
Like a big dip.
Yeah, a dip in conference play. And you saw there was when they went on that 4-game win streak, after coming off the losses, lost to Dayton, they were shooting the ball better. Now they've dipped a little bit, shooting the three a little bit the last couple games as well. So it's just been inconsistent. That's sort of been the operative throughout the season. It's been inconsistent offensively, but this inside scoring needs to pick up, particularly with a player like Marcus Santos Silva inside. They've tried going big. It hasn't worked as well. And you just kind of need that inside scoring to kind of create those open outside looks that they want.
It's been a really interesting season, especially on offense, because, like you said, the dips from production's like really, really high, and then it goes really, really, really low from game to game, opponent to opponent, and it varies. Going back to their shooting, it's not as if the shots they're taking are bad. Majorly, they're taking good shots. They just, for some reason, no matter if it's Siegel Center or in the Robin Center or Eagle Bank Arena or whatever, they just aren't falling right now. So that's one big frustration for any VCU fans. The other big thing on offense is, like you said, the paint game. Last year, the paint game was a tremendous asset for them once they got it established. This year, it's still an asset, but it's non-existent because they can't establish a paint because Marcus Santos Silva can't do everything. And that's one big thing Coach Rhodes is trying to figure out right now is who's going to be my second command in the paint alongside Santos Silva, whether it's Corey Douglas, Vince Williams, or whoever can crash the boards, get some paint production, and make opponents worry about the paint while also worrying about their three-point threat, because everybody knows VCU needs to live and die by a three. That actually should be a T-shirt. VCU, live and die by a three, patent-pending trademark. And on defense, Havoc, like we all saw, Havoc was not Havoc at all in November, but they finally got together with the full-court press, the zone defense, diamond pressing, trapping, and all that, and it started to become alive again. Was really good. I think almost got top 10 in, like, defensive production in nationally. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think per KenPom, there's still 26th defensive efficiency in the country, so still pretty good.
Yeah. So it's just like their offense. It sputters. It can either be really good, trap, cause turnovers, or be non-existent, and the opponent just scores 40 straight points in the paint with nobody marking.
I can hear Will Wade in my head throw the dang thing inside. he said that a good bit in press conferences, but it's very true, right? You have to start inside out. You get good shots on the perimeter, and they're not able to do that a lot because there's so much reliance on MSS. And Hassan has a very bright future, and I love the mentality that Corey plays with, but you notice that every time they get post touches, it just looks awkward.
Yeah.
The footwork is not there, and so there's a lot of pressure on MSS to be that only guy that can facilitate the offense from the inside out.
Yeah. Defensively, you talked about a little bit, overall defense has been still good. They're still high in the country with forcing turnovers, mm-hmm. particularly steals. Now, that's the way they want to kind of produce is create steals, create turnovers, and score off of those on the fast break. That's easy offense. That kind of gets the offense going in the half court when they get those points in transition that way. But even though they're forcing so many turnovers, you've seen an increase in opponent field goal percentage.
Yeah.
You're seeing opponents shoot the ball more efficiently against VCU this year. They were high in the country, particularly in three-point percentage defense last year and overall field goal percentage defense last year. But they've kind of fallen in both categories this year, particularly against good teams in conference play. Like Richmond shot 50% in that loss back on Saturday. Rhode Island in the loss at Rhode Island shot 49%. Dayton in the loss at Dayton shot 50%. So you can't have those types of numbers against good teams. You need to do a better job. And those are teams, obviously, again, they're good teams. And Dayton and Richmond are two of the most efficient teams offensively in the conference. But still, you got to do a better job of that. That's putting yourself in a bad hole.
I think it's also with the pressure, as we talked about a few minutes earlier, the pressure of your VCU, you're picked number one unanimously in preseason to win the conference. This is supposed to be your special year with your senior leaders having their last ride in a black and gold uniform. And it's just that little niche of pressure on every single one of those accomplishments and objectives that they have. And now that it's settling in that, oh, we're not even close to what we're trying to reach, that's mentally affecting those kids rocking that VCU uniform at Siegel Center playing the sport that they love. But the thing is, they got to learn how to overcome this, which I think they can. The season's not over. There's still at least 6, 7, 8 more games to go.
They can fix it all tomorrow.
Yeah.
If they win tomorrow, they're on the right side of the
ball. Yeah, it's like, sunny day in RVA again. But, it's just that pressure is huge. And those kids can implement the pressure and make a diamond out of, like you said, tomorrow.
That field goal percentage is somewhat because other teams' bigs are killing us too, mm-hmm. right? Other teams are really committed to getting the ball inside. We see it a lot with Golden, who's so good. He's such a good passer from the post, and he's so good at facilitating offense from the inside out that other teams have started to commit to that, and VCU's bigs aren't able to defend it. And when your bigs get into foul trouble too, like we've seen with MSS, that can be, like we said, they rely on him so much offensively that can be crippling for VCU.
Yep. Yeah. So we talked about the season as a whole. I want to kind of zero in a little bit more and talk about, you know, the first, you know, first 12, 18 games. You know, they're sitting at 7-5 right now. They're kind of outside of that top four, that double bye, I guess, contention at the moment. There's still obviously a chance to get that, but it's,
six, you know, games to go.
With the way teams are bunched up here, it's going to be very tough for them to kind of get into contention for that. I think, again, it's sort of been an operative word for the season as a whole, but and also these 12-18 games, this inconsistency, like, you know, they play well for certain stretches. They had that four-game win streak before they went on this little dip here. You know, I think you've seen them kind of struggle against the teams who are at the other echelon teams in the conference, whether it be Dayton, you know, they lost to Rhode Island twice, lost to Richmond, you know, one out of two. They're beating up on some of the teams at the lower level of the A-10. Besides the bad loss to Mason, but you know the LaSalle, St. Joe's, Fordham, stuff like that. Which you expect, they obviously should, and you expect them to take care of Mason as well. Yeah. But against the other teams who, you know, you expect to be up in that top four, they've struggled with, and that's kind of concerning.
It is, but with six games left, let's see. Versus Dayton, at St. Louis, versus George Washington, versus Duquesne, at Davidson in the finale. So the conference, I guess, is a bit lighter, but it's still a heavy competitive league, especially with most of those teams fighting for the third and fourth spot because those spots are still up for grabs. Not really worried about Dayton and Rhode Island because that one and two is already kind of locked up, so it's not in VCU's vision to get that. But in conference play right now, the conference itself has gotten vastly better than it did last season. Mm-hmm. Granted, VCU hasn't shown up this season, but I think right now at 7-5, I'll take it because Dayton's good. Let me rephrase that. Dayton's great.
Yeah.
Rhode Island, great.
Yeah.
Richmond, kind of the surprise of the season for me because I was expecting Richmond to be good, but not this good this early heading into the final stretch of the season. Mm-hmm. So they might be the three seed. Yeah. And I can see VCU sneaking and being a sneaky dark horse fourth, but they got to get the wins, though.
Yeah.
And the team is capable. They got the weapons. They got the three-point shooting. They got the paint game. They just have to somehow magically mold all that together to perform consistently. And that's the big issue right there.
Yeah.
12-6 could get you there, right? Theoretically, yeah. that four seed. And so even if you lose to Dayton, St. Louis, and Duquesne, everything kind of rests on those games. Those are two teams that you're jockeying for position with in the conference. Mm-hmm. So it's conceivable. Not everything as far as A-10 tournament goes is riding on a win against Dayton. Yeah. There's still a route to having a good showing in Brooklyn, but it would take 5-0, yeah. You know, down the stretch after really they can't lose to any of the cupcakes down on the bottom of the conference. They've got to beat the teams that they're jockeying for position with in the middle of it.
Yeah, 100%. So I want to move on. One of our special segments here, player spotlight segment. I want to look at who's been VC's MVP of the season so far. There's a couple contenders for this, but I want to go with Marcus Santos Silva. I think he's obviously leading VC in scoring right now, leading VC in rebounding. As we talked about, it's a lot on his shoulders this year. It's just been VC's premier rebounder and being VC's like only true threat inside, consistent threat inside.
Yeah.
And he's kind of taking, like last year where he skyrocketed, we saw him take a huge leap last year, and he's kind of continued to do that. Just like the team overall, he's had some inconsistency issues, particularly, you know, just recent stretch in A-10 play. Mm-hmm. But he's also always a guy you can count on. He you know, not surprised by going off for, you know, 20 points and, you know, 12 rebounds. Like, that's, you know, you see that and you're not surprised by that stat line. He scored 26 points already this year in a game. So it went for, what, in the A-10 tournament last year, what, 22 rebounds in that one game? So,
yeah, about 22.
Yeah, so, you know, he's a guy who can put up some big numbers. He just he needs some better support, which we talked about a little bit. But he's that motor. He's a guy, you know, who came in and lost, what, 40-plus pounds his freshman year.
He was 300 pounds when he got here.
It's crazy, yeah. He's not the tallest five man in the land. But,
no.
But, he's, you know, he's 250 pounds. He's a very solid guy. But for being as big as he is, he has a great motor. He just never seems to really get tired. And he has just, you know, not only physically, but just energy-wise, he's always a guy who's talking, clapping, mm-hmm. kind of trying to keep that morale up on the team. And he's just intangibles, tangibles with the stats. He's kind of producing on both ways.
And he's also willing to learn, which is the big factor with him being as good as he is right now and how good he possibly could be in the future. He continues to learn the game of basketball. He learns from his coaches. He learns from his teammates. Right? He's like, okay, I'm good at this area. All right, I'm not really good here. What do I got to do? I talk to my teammates, talk to my coach. All right, I'm going to work on this, and he'll be focused on that. And the sky's the limit literally for him because he is a tremendously good post player. And if he gets the help he needs, BC's going to be good for a little bit.
Yeah.
He's such a Mike Rhodes recruit mentality-wise,
yes.
Right? Like he's like he says VCU to me as far as his will to win, and it seems like everybody kind of follows his example. But it seems like teams are keying off on him a lot more this year. Mm. And I don't think that his play has had any kind of a regression from last year. He's like you guys said, if anything, he's maybe taking another step forward. But that's one of the first things that teams say in playing VCU is we can't let them play inside out. We can't let them get MSS a bunch of post touches because then their offense runs through that. And it's if you don't turn the ball over and if you stop Santos Silva and put a couple bodies on him, then BCU is going to have a tough time beating you. And I think that's what a lot of teams are saying when they come into facing BCU. And he's dealing with that as an upperclassman now. It's something that a lot of upperclassmen who took a step forward as a sophomore in college basketball deal with is all of a sudden you're on the scouting report.
Yeah.
And he's at the top of the scouting report now for BCU. And I think that that's something that we're seeing him struggle with a little bit this year. And Rhodes and BCU schematically struggle with is how do we find space for Marcus when teams are keying off on him so much.
Yeah. Exactly. We talked about a little bit. I think they maybe tried to help for three games starting Corey Douglas because they had some success with that second half against Richmond at the Siegel Center when they had a huge second half pull away from the game that had been tied at 39 at the halftime. They started Corey in place of Mikel at the four in the second half. And I think it opened some things up for Santos Silva because Richmond, other than Grant Golden, doesn't really have a second big to kind of contend inside. Mm-hmm. And they decided to start Corey for those three games after that. And they got out-rebound each of those games, so it hasn't worked as well. So I think maybe trying to figure out some combinations to kind of take some pressure off Santos Silva a little bit.
I'm going to go with, not to piggyback, Marcus Santos is great. I think mine is actually going to be Deriante Jenkins because compared to the guy that was there last year as a junior, he vastly improved his athletic performance. He's using his length more on defense, and he still has that very devilish grin every time he shoots a three-pointer in somebody's face. He's stepped up his offensive production tremendously. He's not turning over the ball as much. I think he's second on the team in turnovers, which is phenomenal compared to the guy that was a sophomore that literally tried to dribble and do everything.
Yeah.
But I like his attitude. I like his fight. As Coach Rose says, he wants his players to fight like crazy. Jenkins is that player because he fights like crazy no matter how bad it's going to get. He always still smiles. He's like, all right, whatever. I'm here. I'm just going to keep shooting. Just going to try and keep finding a way. And the team is feeding off that, especially with Evans being out. It's like Jenkins becomes that second energy player that goes, all right, guys, I'm just going to drive into the paint and just keep growing and keep going and keep going and keep fighting. So with that, I think Deriante is my Ram of the season so far. Honorable mention to Van because I don't know how Van got his offensive production back, but that fight itself of him getting back to shooting, that's my honorable mention. But for me, it's Jenkins.
I'm going to go with Bones. I'm going to go with the freshman because obviously everyone's been incredibly impressed by him this year. There was a really telling at the end of the Mason game. By the way, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I was so upset because you'd become resigned to the fact that they were going to lose, and then it got so close there down the stretch, and I was starting to hope. And it felt like Bones was the one that really brought the sense of urgency in those last few minutes. And for me, that was really telling for the freshman to be the one that comes in and brought the sense of urgency. I think he forced up 1-3 off the dribble pretty late, and it looked like a bad shot on surface level, but it was a situation in which VCU had to have a three, and the shot clock was winding down. And he was the one that took the onus on himself to just put the ball up. And so his mentality has been so impressive this year. If VCU does kind of continue to sputter out, then we're probably going to look back and say the most exciting moments this season were Bones to Hassan Ward, alley-oops.
Yeah.
So the future does look bright, and I think that even if this season does not turn out the way that everyone's wanted it, that's probably the biggest positive that you'll take away, right, is Bones. And it looks like he's going to be a guy to lead this program going forward, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, 100%. Just touch real quick on those two guys as well. You know, Deriante Jenkins, his defense this year has just been incredible. He's already well surpassed his steal total from last year. And, you know, I think you see him grow each year, and this year just kind of exploded where, you know, he's become, you know, say one of the best defenders in the conference, really, just as far as forcing turnovers. So that's been a huge development, just kind of taking advantage of that length that he's obviously always had and using it to, you know, good advantage. And I don't know how many You know, fast breaks, we've seen him going this year when he's created those, those steals. It seemed like a ton. So he's really jumped up in that. And Bones, just I feel like I've said it a million times this year, but just his confidence this year has been just insane for a freshman. Like, he came
almost a naivety, right, for a freshman coming in, right? Yeah. But in a good way.
Yeah. This also proves that if you grow your hair, you can play defense. Love you, DJ.
But he's come in, I feel like, from game one that he's played, like, he hasn't really looked like a freshman. Like, he's looked comfortable, and that's huge, particularly for a point guard.
Yeah.
You know, running the show, you need that, and that's been huge. And he's been asked to step up in some big situations. You know, he started at Mason when Marcus Evans was, I guess, a little disciplined benching there. Mm-hmm. He started against St. Bonaventure when Marcus Evans was out, and he started on Saturday against Richmond when Marcus Evans was out. So he's been kind of pushed into some bigger situations, and I don't think you could ask for a more prepared freshman for those situations. So it's been huge.
Bones' three-point threat is going to be a benefit for his collegiate career here at VCU. And as he continues getting live gameplay, which I agree with Coach Rhodes, that's the best way to learn lessons of what you need to get better at. His defense is not where it needs to be right now, especially like on man-to-man, because sometimes he loses his mark, or on zone defense he's not in the right spot. But you see he's continuing to learn what he did wrong. And with Evans on the bench, if he's not playing, he'll be like, hey, this is what you did wrong. Just do this, 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 this. And I like that camaraderie when you see your senior guard telling his backup and the future of this program exactly what he needs to do to get better. So as Bones continues to improve live in gameplay, he's not 100% right now what he's going to be as a player. He's like maybe – I don't even want to say 25%. He's even lower than that. He's got so much potential. And the way he's shooting threes, the way he passes the ball, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this young man grow into the senior as a VCU Ram here.
Yeah. Mentioned that, it was very telling quote. Marcus Evans, a couple games ago, post-game, he told the media after the game that we haven't even seen half of what Bones can do at this point. So, what he's shown has been pretty impressive. So if we haven't seen half, then he has a very, very, very bright future for VCU. So,
and he's got the tools mentally and physically to be a good defender. I think that's somebody. Everybody can say they have the confidence that he's going to get there eventually, even if he's not there right now.
Definitely. So moving on now to the most telling stat segment. This is going to be kind of each breaking out most telling stat for where VCU season has gone. Just break it down to one or two statistics each, and kind of look at it that way. So
or three or four.
You want to go first? That's okay.
I have to go last.
To start off, mine is kind of brief. I was looking yesterday. VCU, to this point of season, after being out-rebounded at Richmond on Saturday, has been out-rebounded a total of 14 times this season. And last year, out-rebounded.
First the heart.
Out-rebounded a total of 14 times all of last year. That's including, A-10 tournament, including the NCAA tournament game. And now, six games ago in the regular season, plus A-10 tournament, plus postseason, they've already been at 14 times. And it's really hurt these last couple games, or last maybe four games, really can say. So something Mike Rose actually talked about today in his press conference, they haven't been the strongest overall this season in rebounding. They've been minus 2.6, but I think it's been particularly glaring these last few, especially being out-rebounded by 21 against George Mason, a team that's not particularly big. And then, being out rebounded the way they were by 10 in the first half against Richmond, there's still some extra opportunities was what made those games such such blowouts. So we got to limit those extra opportunities, hit the offensive glass, and you also got to make sure you're sure on the defensive end to limit those opportunities. So it's all about possessions, how many possessions you can get when you're not rebounding. You're hurting, cutting back your own possessions. So
it's all about possession. It's all about how many players are crashing the boards. Because in November, back in that long time ago when VCU was doing good, we were on a six-game winning streak and first time in school history starting 6-0. Back when the days were good, the team rebounding was kind of there. You saw Corey and Santos and Evans and Van crash the boards. Then all of a sudden, it was just Santos there against three of those boys on the visiting side of things. And then you go, We need that back. We need the team rebounding back. And then it kind of came back, and then it got started winning again. I'm like, all right, we're back. And now we're back to square one. There's no team rebounding. There's no communication. There's no unity. There's something amiss in the paint where, games are won in the paint. I mean, you can shoot all threes in the ones, but eventually you got to go down there to get the ball, shoot, rebound, assist, and one where you just throw a layup in the air and it scores and stuff like that. But you need to go. They need their rebounding game. But to build off your stat, this is mine, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this. But here we go. It's about rebounding. It's at this point in the season, VCU has been out-rebounded by their opponents 853 to 918. Since Coach Rhodes started his big lineup, which is two forwards, Santo Silva and Corey Douglas, VCU is 1-3. And with that starting rotation, VCU has been out-rebounded 118 to 161.
Yeah.
Which appears counterintuitive, doesn't it? You put more bigs on the floor. You put more bigs on the floor, you should theoretically rebound.
Get more rebounds. Yeah.
But here's the reason why I think that hasn't worked. Okay, so this is all per KenPom, and bear with me here because this is a few numbers. VCU's average height in the country at face value is 143rd. So they're somewhat middle of the country as far as team-wide height. Their effective height is 313th. So they're not using the height that they have effectively. Why is that? The average center height is 331st. Power forward height is 258th. Small forward height is 129th. Shooting guard is 52nd. Point guard is 42nd. We all know that VCU recruits mobile bigs and longer rangier guards. The guards have to crash the glass, and I think that the solution to the rebounding problem is actually to play a smaller lineup because the guards have to crash the glass and you try and force other teams to go small against you, right? And where VCU's height and reach advantages are 1-3 most of the time. And at the 4 and the 5, they're usually smaller. I know that 6-7 doesn't sound small, but against the Udoka Azubukis of the world, that's not going to get it done.
No.
And tomorrow against the Obi Toppins of the world, that's not going to get it done. So I think that what Rhodes did was actually counterintuitive to the problem. I think it actually played to the root of the problem, which is that VCU's bigs are getting out-rebounded by other bigs. The solution, perhaps, I'm just plausibly posing this, playing a little armchair coach here, is to play a smaller lineup and to use your guard height and your guard length, which VCU usually has an advantage of against other teams because you recruit long-rangey guards that are great defensive players, i.e. Dariante Jenkins. So perhaps a smaller lineup could fix that problem, and VCU needs to kind of go against the grain and go against common, you know, what would be the common knowledge. I mean, that would be my first thought, is we need to play more bigs that we're struggling to rebound. But perhaps that's the problem, is that VCU's bigs are usually getting out-rebounded by other bigs because they're not as tall and they're more mobile, and we need to try and run other bigs off the floor as opposed to playing into that problem.
Yeah. I think you perhaps saw the staff do that first, 21 games of the season when they started Mikel, you know, at 6'5", at the 4, with Santo Silva. And then they kind of hit that spurt where, like, maybe we need to change some things up, and they put Corey in, and it wasn't working. And
Kel's rebounding efficiency is second on the team after MSS.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Gotta love stats.
Yeah. But then, you know, like I said, I think maybe what motivated that change was how well it worked second half against Richmond, which obviously was a very small sample size. But they decided to see, hey, let's see how it works these last couple games. And it didn't really work the way they wanted. So that's why they switched and actually obviously put Vince starting on Saturday instead of Mikel, which is similar, basically the same type of player. He's 6'6", Mikel is 6'5", but same, you know, build, and is a smaller a four-man. And, you know, it didn't work as well then. But I think maybe earlier on I realized that they, like you said, they need to take advantage of that mobility and kind of run opposing guards or opposing bigs off the floor a little bit, like you said, because they know they don't have traditional big man height down the, you know, or in depth at that big man height. So they, you know, want to kind of run and gun and take advantage of it. But I think they hit a little rut there in conference play where it wasn't working as well. So maybe that's why they try to change. We'll see how it works moving forward. And I think these changes in the starting line we've seen are just trying to get something out of it, you know, try to spark a little bit of change. And so far it hasn't worked. We'll see what they do on Tuesday. Maybe, who knows, maybe Mikel will start again on Tuesday. Who knows? But I think they're just trying to spark a little something here with these changes we've seen in the last few games.
Like you mentioned earlier, it seems like it should have worked against a team like Richmond, right, that relies so much on Golden. And it did the first time, perhaps. I don't know if Mooney made any adjustments, you know, as far as their preparation, but perhaps that's something they talked about, is how are we going to combat this too big lineup from VCU, and they seem to have solved whatever the problem was.
It seems the big adjustment that teams have figured out when playing VCU is just basically crash the boards. That's what Coach Paulson did with George Mason. All he had was AJ, who broke the single-season blocking record that night. But his adjustment was very simple. Literally, when that ball goes up in the air, I want all of my players to go to the paint and crash the boards, because Marcus Santa Silva is a humongous human being. He can't block five people at once just to get a rebound. So that adjustment being known, all the teams are now going to start doing that. They're like, all right, we're just going to crash the boards because you have strength in numbers. You have five people against their three, odds are you're going to win the rebound battle. Mm-hmm. So Coach Rhodes and them needs to adjust on how we're going to get more Rams into the paint and how can we consistently grab that ball in the air, whether it's rebounding drills or, you know, kick out passes if we go inside and got to just kick it back out and just see what happens. It's just a strength in numbers thing from my aspect.
I think I yelled box out at the TV three or four times during the game. And again, that's armchair coaching, obviously. It's, you know, everybody knows to box out on the team. But it was frustrating.
Yeah.
So now we'll move on and talk about the rest of the league. We've talked a lot about VCU already. We'll talk about the rest of the league a little bit. I was just getting down to the wire. There's about six games left in the regular season. So A-10 tournament is almost here.
Now or never.
Yeah, it'll be here in less than a month. So we're going to go contender versus pretender. Take a look at that. We're not gonna do VCU quite yet. We'll talk about VCU, the rest of VCU's schedule in a little bit. But looking at the other 13 teams in the conference, we'll kind of rotate a little bit and pick a team out of our media gift from the 2018 A-10 tournament in DC. Shout out Atlantic 10. we're gonna pick a team out of it and just briefly say why we think they're a contender for the A-10 tournament title or a pretender for the A-10 tournament title. So. I'll get things started here with St. Joseph's.
Are they even pretending?
Which, I'm going to say pretender.
They're currently 0-12.
Pretender. They've struggled, you know, in the early goings here. I think they're building a little bit, but Ryan Daly can't do it all by himself. So, pretender.
You got an easy one. Let's see. Fordham. Pretender. We're going to just move on.
I don't think either of those teams are fooling anybody, including
themselves. I think we got to do this one more time because we got the easy one.
Oh, wow. Right, we're going to keep the trend going. UMass.
Wow. All right.
Do I
even? You don't even have to say that's round two. Bonus round.
We drew the cupcakes first. No offense to those three programs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hey, continue fighting. It's tough. It's with all due respect. Yeah, Atlantic 10 is rough. We understand.
George Washington.
Did you rig this way?
I know.
We're just starting from the bottom.
Say one nice thing about G-Dub.
Well, Jamie Christian, New Kent native, Richmond area native, former VCU assistant. I will say they're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Jameer Nelson Jr. Mm-hmm. I was at Jameer Nelson's, former 18th grade at St. Joe's. So his son is now GW and he's playing well. So they seem to be moving in the right direction. They're playing a lot better than they were last year. So give them, 3-4 years, I think it'll be in a good spot.
Okay. All right.
This is fun. Good idea.
This is Kazi's idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. We're just going to
double.
Yeah, we're going to go that one. LaSalle. Oh, man. Pretender. They got a youthful bunch. I will give them that. They almost scared me when we went to Philadelphia and played at LaSalle in one of the oldest arenas in A-10.
Gritty.
Yeah, they got that Philly grit, trust the process and all that, but still pretender. Watch that get like the hardest one.
Oh, my God, Dayton. St. Louis.
Oh.
That's a good one. That's middle of the pack. You have to say contender, right? Physicality, they're always tough. Sometimes it looks like there's a lid on the basket for St. Louis, and so they have a pretty low floor when they're not flowing offensively, I think. But they also have a kind of high ceiling because of the physicality and the defense that when the threes are falling, they can be a good team. And they're the kind of team, I think, that you look at and say that's a team that could get hot and win the A-10 tournament, I think. It's a kind of team that with a good base to build off of defensively, and if the shots start falling, then perhaps they could be there at the end. So I'm going to say contender. Big game for VCU will be at St. Louis.
Yeah,
yes. That'll be huge. 9 o'clock tip off.
Oh, gosh.
Having trouble?
St. Bonaventure. It's an interesting group. I want to say contender. They haven't beaten good teams in the conference. They kind of struggled against, sort of like VCU was sort of the upper echelon of the conference, but they've beaten up on the bottom half of the conference. But they have two of the most talented young players in the conference, and Kyle Lofton, a point guard, and the five-man, Ashuna Shunaway. He's one of the best rebounders in the conference as well. They have some talent. Coach Schmidt always seemed to have those guys ready, and You know, just like St. Louis made a run in the A-10 tournament last year, we would not be surprised to see those guys kind of start clicking at a good time, and you never know, maybe make a run to the final. So I want to say contender.
That's true. St. Bonaventure is always one of those teams that you don't think is going to be sneaky good until tournament. You go, oh, wow, they made the semifinals again? All right.
Yeah. Respect that fan base, too. I love that arena.
That fan base is crazy. Yeah. I'll give them that. They're definitely crazy. Let's go with this one. Duquesne. Ooh, that's a good one.
Might be the toughest one.
I like their three-point shooting. I like their youth. Oh, man, that's tough. Because I'm thinking about this because if they get a good seeding in the tournament, because tournament seeding matters. I don't care what anybody says. You get on the right side of the bracket and the right team gets hot at the right time, you can make a straight run to the final compared to the other side. So with that being said, I'm going to go and say they could be a contender based on their seeding. They got youth. They're not afraid. They've gotten some good wins. They're in the middle of the pack. They might go a little bit under the radar because it's Duquesne, not Duquesne, as some people like to say.
Duquesne.
Yes, Duquesne. And their fan base is really adamant about their team this year, and they feel like there's something special in there. So I'm going to give them the benefit of doubt. I'm going to give them the dark horse contender card.
They had a pretty light non-conference schedule is the thing with
Duquesne.
That's
also true.
It feels like that record might be inflated a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, I got it. What do we say about Dayton? It's the best team the A-10's ever had. Right?
I mean, they're number five.
Yeah.
Toppin is a bad man.
Yeah.
Sorry, Obi Toppin. Sorry. Oh. Not the brother. But
yeah. Lottery pick. Prospectively, right?
Oh, I mean,
he's up there right now. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's good for the A-10. It is. Mm-hmm. And obviously, VCU and Dayton is a rivalry, but it's a great arena with a great atmosphere. And yeah, at this point of the season, there's no chance of anyone catching them. I think the rest of the conference is just happy for them and happy for how good they are and excited to see what they can do in the NCAA tournament because they might be on the one line.
Yeah.
And that's going to be fun to see as an A-10 team on the A-10 one line.
As a one seed, that would be amazing.
Insane. All right, Rhode Island. high key contender for sure. Like we talked about, look like they're, you know, getting closer and closer to locking up that two seed. I have to say David Cox has done a really good job. Last year they went a little slide there. Things were looking kind of rough, and you know, they've seen them kind of come back together. You know, Jeff Dowd and Patrick Russell playing well. Got the young guy sophomore and Tyrese Martin playing well. Cyril Langevin feel like he's been in A-10 for forever, but he's continuing to play well. And that's a good group. It's a tough group that can shoot the ball, and they're physical with guys like Cyril Langevin. So very, very high contender. I think obviously if they end up being 1-2, they could end up being them and Dayton in the final, and that would be a heck of a game for sure.
That'll be a very entertaining final for Dayton.
Psychologically, it seems like they're almost in an opposite place than VCU is right now, as far as they've got experience on the roster, but they're saying like this is our moment, whereas VCU is a little nervous about taking advantage of the opportunity. Rhode Island more, it seems like they're seizing it, I think.
I can see that. All right, let's see. The two again. Let's see. Richmond. Oh, my God.
Well, I'm glad you got that one.
All right, I'm trying to keep my fandom unbiased as my black and gold heart. So let's see. Richmond's good. They got Golden in the paint. Sherrod, I still can't believe those threes. Francis is back healthy. And they seem to be gelling at the right time, especially as number three in the A-10 right now, I believe. So they also could get a double round bye. I think they'll get far in the tournament. I don't think they'll have enough to win it. But I'm going to keep them as a contender because – They beat VCU, so it was 1-1 in the Capital City Classic this year, and they're rugged. They got the pieces to win the tournament. I just don't think they're going to win it, but I don't want to admit it, but Richmond's good, guys. I don't want to admit it, but they're good.
Most projections have them right on the bubble right now, too. So if they don't win the A-10 tournament, it's plausibly an at-large team.
Yeah, the VCU when they needed that, and that was their biggest opportunity, and they got that, so. It's realistically going to run the table, honestly.
The thing hurting them is they only get Rhode Island and Dayton each once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So their opportunities were cut down a little bit this year. I love Jacob Gilliard. Yeah. Even though he's a Richmond player, it's just he's a hard-nosed kid, and he's fun to watch.
They got a good team at the University of Henrico.
I wasn't going to be the one to say it.
I did.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
George Mason. Pretender, but that feels wrong to say right now.
Yeah, right.
They just took it to VCU.
We're talking about the A-10 tournament.
I like what they got going for the future. AJ, a ton of energy. I remember they talked about they had a fantastic team practice leading
into
that game. This year, I don't think it's going to happen. I like the energy that they're playing with right now. And who knows? Maybe they take that to Brooklyn and they catch fire. Mm. But pretender for this season.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they gave like a upset, but I don't think they'll make it to the final, though. And yeah, you got trouble there.
Technical difficulties.
We do know who it is at this juncture.
Yeah. I wonder who it could be.
All right. Got Davidson, of course. Mm-hmm. Definitely a contender for sure. They've underachieved a little bit this year, but at the same time, we have two of the best players in the conference in Kellen Grady and John Axel Gudmundsson. You're always a threat to get high at the right time and win three games in a row or four games in a row and win a tournament. So even though they've kind of underachieved, I still think you can't count them out. You can't look past them in a tournament setting for sure, just because of that experience. Maybe he hasn't played as well last year. I like their post player, Luka Brockovich. He's got that old school game. I like the freshman in Lee. He's really can shoot the ball, shoot the lights out the ball. He scored like 20 against BCU. Bob McKillop, sounds like a super experienced coach. So he's been there, done that. So he knows how to lead a group through a tournament setting. So even though, they were picked second behind BCU, to finish second behind BCU in the A-10 preseason poll,
yep.
And they've kind of slid a little bit. They've obviously lost two big-time players, and Keyshawn Pritchett at the knee issue, and Luke Frampton, who took a personal leave of absence. That's been one of the reasons why they've hasn't played to up to expectations. But even the pieces they have left, I think they have an opportunity to make a run in a tournament for sure.
Mm-hmm. Their offensive ceiling is so high that you have to respect it in a tournament setting. Yeah
for sure. Again, VCU, six games left to finish the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
The big one is Dayton. That's, Isaac Van said before the Richmond game, he felt like Richmond was a must win. This on Tuesday is a must win. This is their last real true opportunity to try to put themselves on the right side of the bubble and into a tournament at large picture. It would be Dayton moved up to number 5 in the AP top 25 today from number 6. It was going to be the highest ranked opponent to ever come to the Siegel Center.
Mm-hmm.
If a VCU won, it would be the highest ranked opponent they've beaten since they beat Kansas, number 2 ranked Kansas, in the NCAA tournament in the Final Four run in 2011. It would be the highest ranked opponent they've ever beaten at home. They beat St. Louis, which was number 10 back in 2014. So it's a huge, huge game for VCU. This kind of thing could set the direction of these final six games. They win, looking better shape. They kind of, correct some of their mistakes and kind of get back feeling good on the morale side. They lose, you can see things slide a little bit because, again, you have to go to St. Louis on Friday, and they haven't always played the best on the road. And you drop those two games, and all of a sudden you lost 4 in a row. So I think this game could kind of define the rest of the regular season for sure.
Yeah, number 5 Dayton at Siegel on a Tuesday night on national TV. It's huge, especially with the way the season's gone. This is, like you said, possibly their last opportunity for that big resume win for their March Madness resume. They're on a losing streak. Everything is basically back against the wall. Come out, fight like crazy for 40 minutes and see what the result gives you. Of course, Obi Toppin is a machine. He's going to get his. He's going to get his points. He's going to get his rebounds. The real question is how much can Havoc limit him from getting a 20-10 double-double to maybe only 10 and maybe 7 rebounds. It just depends on what Havoc does. It also depends on the supporting cast like Krucher and if Havoc can speed them up to get them into foul trouble because, as we all know, Coach Grant doesn't have a bench per se. They rely heavily on their starters. It also depends on the energy, which is a big thing. Coach Rhodes wants them to fight like crazy and step on their throat for 40 minutes. It's possible. They have the tools to do it. They just need to actually do it on Tuesday.
Second biggest game in Siegel Center history, I'm going to throw out and say, behind Shaka's return. Anything else come to mind? Season rides on it.
Yeah.
Outside of Coach Wade coming back the first game. But that was for different reasons.
Yes. Yes. That was for animosity's
sake.
I would be really interested, and I don't think VCU is going to do this. I don't think they have the personnel. I want to see someone try and zone Dayton because they rely so much off of pick and roll action with their bigs getting going toward the basket that I obviously that's not VCU style. I don't think it's going to happen, but past this game, I want to see someone down the stretch try and zone them and see how they react to it. The biggest thing is limiting their bigs rolling to the basket. They rely a ton on that. Crutcher initiating the offense. When VCU beat Richmond at home, they really keyed off on Gilliard, and it seemed like that somewhat broke apart Richmond's offensive flow. The same thing could plausibly happen with Dayton if you can really get into Crutcher's grill. So that's what I'm going to look for, is going to try and be really physical with him, put multiple bodies on him, give Derry some time on him, give Isaac some time on him, give Evans some time on him, and try and throw different looks at him. Against Toppin, anytime he receives the ball in the post, I want to see two bodies, right? You want to see, don't leave MSS alone trying to deal with him, because MSS, you have the potential for him getting into foul trouble then, and that could be really dangerous for VCU. Like you said, if they're going to win, it would be Dayton getting in foul trouble and taking advantage of how much longer VCU's rotation is. That's the big, I think when you look at these rosters, the big advantage that you see VCU could plausibly have, raise the tempo, get their legs out from under them a little bit, and then in the second half, maybe the shooting falls apart a little bit. I'm optimistic. I am. I think that it VCU has to look at this as a chance to make up for all of the recent wrongs. Because they win tomorrow night, then all of a sudden everyone's forgot about Mason and Richmond, right? And you're on the right side of the bubble, and you have five games left. You got a big one Friday night, a tough one at St. Louis. But after that, I mean, Duquesne, like we've said, nobody's still really sure how good they are. They might be fool's gold. That record's a little inflated. So if you get this Dayton win, then the path is clear. The sky's not quite falling yet. But it's the toughest test perhaps this program has ever had, obviously, with the highest ranked opponent ever coming into the Siegel Center. It's going to be a lot of fun. That atmosphere is going to be amazing. Win or lose, it's going to be fun.
I think it's a blackout tomorrow, too. So it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. It's going to be wild.
Yeah. I'm optimistic as well of it. I'm wishing, praying to the heavens above that VCU gets the win tomorrow. I'm also expecting a really, really physical game between Obi Toppin and Marcus Santos Silva down the paint. I'm hoping that the three-point live and die three padding pending that we talked about from VCU comes back to life and ignites the Siegel Center, which is already going to be rambunctiously loud and crazy as always for big games like this. And if the players fight like crazy, they can do this. They can get the upset. The upset is possible. It's not impossible, but if they got the right mindset and they're putting the work with all their home fans behind them, it's going to be a crazy night at Siegel Center tomorrow.
What goes up must come down, right?
Yeah.
Is Dayton really going to run the table in A-10 play? They're really good. I don't know. This is their toughest test on the schedule.
Yeah. I mean, they went to overtime and they won a game. So against St. Louis. It's possible. They have some weaknesses. You just have to continue batching those weaknesses until they get down enough to get the win. Yeah. It's possible. They're a great team.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to have that perfect record.
That's one thing to VCU's benefit. You look back at the last game, maybe the biggest key of that game, the biggest, I guess, part of that game was that 6-minute stretch where Dayton went on a 22-0 run. But you pull out the other 34 minutes, and VCU played competitively. They played competitively throughout the first half.
Outscored them by, what, six, I think, in the rest of the game.
Six.
Yeah. And, you know, after that 22-0 run, it kind of found their bearings again and tried to pull back. So it wasn't like a situation where, like, they were getting killed the whole game.
Yeah.
It was just that 6-minute stretch where the wheels kind of fell off and they found themselves in too big of a hole. But they played well against Dayton really overall in the first game. So that's maybe something they can, you know, put in their pocket heading to this game. So we'll see.
You don't envision a 22 run like that at the Siegel Center. You would think as a VCU supporter, the VCU is much less prone to that than they are on the road. And look, VCU beat this team at Dayton a year ago. I know that it's a new year and Dayton's flying high right now, but these rosters aren't that different from those teams that played a year ago. So I think you have to have hope if you're a VCU fan.
For sure. So last thing, real quick to wrap up. Look at the A-10 as a whole. It was so much talk last year, the A-10 being down. This year, it is better, but sort of the way these teams are sort of
cannibalized itself.
The way these teams are beating up on each other in A-10 play so far. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how many actually get in the NCAA tournament. I'm going to, I guess, go first and give my prediction. I'm going to say three right now. There was two last year, obviously, St. Louis winning the A-10 tournament and VCU making it as at-large. I'm going to say get back to three, which has sort of been around the average of the A-10. You usually get at least three or four. Sometimes it can stretch to more than that, but typically you can expect at least 3 to 4 from the A-10 to get in. So I want to say 3 this year. Obviously Dayton, say Rhode Island. I'm going to say Richmond gets in. I expect after getting that win on a resume against VCU on Saturday, I think they're going to have success down the final stretch. Like I said, I think it's realistic for Richmond to run the table, and that's 10 wins in a row going into A-10 tournament. They win a game or two in the A-10 tournament, and that's a really nice resume. So I think they get in as well. So I want to say 3 out of the A-10 this year.
I agree. I also think 3 teams. I believe Dayton will win the regular season title outright. I think Rhode Island is good enough to get an at-large bid. And I think it's between Richmond and VCU, because I think one of those teams is going to win the A-10 tournament in Brooklyn. Do VCU need to win the A tournament to get an at-large bid? I believe they do. I think they've had the Mason loss would definitely hurt their bubble chances. Losing at Richmond the way they did also kind of hurt, but Richmond's kind of peaking at the right time. So a good Richmond team getting the wins done as the season continues, that win could possibly help VCU in a weird way that your neighbor beat you in a rivalry game to help you go into the tournament. But as Coach Rhodes usually says, next game gets bigger as you keep winning, so VCU just needs to keep on winning, and they got no problems, and they'll make the tournament at large. Whatever. Great. But, yeah, I think at least at max, I think 3. At minimum, maybe 1 if Rhode Island goes off the map, and then Dayton will go in, but I think Rhode Island has done enough work to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
A-10 fans have kind of pushed this 3-bid league thing.
Yeah, it's becoming a
really
thing.
Nice if they get 3 to stand pat with that. I could see anywhere from 2 to 5, I think is plausible. Dayton is in. Rhode Island probably in, unless they were to totally fall off the map.
Right.
Richmond and VCU both have strong non-conference wins. Richmond beat Wisconsin on a neutral floor, and VCU, obviously, LSU. If VCU gets that Dayton win, then you can see their path to an at-large bid. Okay. Richmond only has the, like we said, only played Rhode Island and Dayton each once in conference this year, which is kind of hurting them. But if they can, I think they have pretty light schedule down the stretch here. So if Richmond wins out, you can conceivably see 4 teams with at-large bids, and then maybe a 5th wild card wins the A-10 tournament. That's obviously like an extreme scenario, but it's plausible, right? So yeah. I think that it's still up in the air, anywhere from 2 to 5. 2 are a lock. For my prediction, I'm going to say 4. I think that VCU or Richmond figures out a way to get an at-large bid. Dayton and Rhode Island are in, and somebody else wins the A-10 tournament.
I think for at-large chances, I think if VCU at least makes it to the final of the tournament, I think win or loss, they'll be in. Same for Richmond. If Richmond makes it to the final, I think they're in. Now, the wild card that I was thinking of, which I can't believe I'm going to say this, is if St. Bonaventure somehow, some way, finally gets that ring in the Brooklyn in Barclay Center.
We know those fans are going to travel.
Oh, I know. But yeah, I think it's very possible that VCU and Richmond can get an at-large bid and not even win the tournament if they make a decent run and handle their business. And even if they make it to the semifinal, if at least it's a close game, they lose by a buzzer beater. If they at least make it to the final 4. Per se, of the A-10 tournament, I think both of them will at least get an at-large bid.
I think that's something that people aren't thinking about when they consider VCU's route to an at-large bid, is they could get a second shot at Dayton. If you're the 4 seed, yeah. Plausibly, you could, you know, so even if you lose this one, win your last 5, and then beat Dayton in the A-10 tournament, all of a sudden, mm-hmm. VCU's right really back on the bubble and making that a difficult decision for the committee.
Yeah.
With that Dayton win, you've got an LSU win who's been great in the SEC, and then Dayton who's run the A-10, so two pretty good conferences they attend this year, obviously up, and arguably the best team in both those conferences. Auburn's probably the best team in the SEC, but Auburn and LSU went to overtime. So it gets really difficult with VCU. I think there's a few different paths that you could see there, and another shot at Dayton would really help them out. It's helping out the other bubble teams in the conference right now to have Dayton there with the prospect of really helping out your resume if you get that win. And Rhode Island, too. VCU would, I'd kind of like a rubber match with Rhode Island. They've obviously struggled against them this year and struggled against them in past years. So I think a lot of VCU fans would be a little nervous about that, but it has the potential to help you a good deal.
Yeah. Well, I think from this conversation, the one thing that's for certain is the rest of the A-10 schedule is going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. So many different scenarios that could play out. So it's going to be interesting to follow how everything goes. Thank you again to Kazi for coming in as a special guest. You can follow all his work at vcusports.com and on Twitter at Shadow Kazi. Thanks to Zach for coming in as well. You can follow all the Times Dispatch coverage at richmond.com the rest of the season.